This is the voice of the Vortex. Hello. Today is May 10th, 2011. According to rumor, Jim Butcher will be adding a new novel to the Dresden Files series sometime in the future. However, the events in the last book convinced me that I need to find a new urban fantasy series. I read books by Patricia Briggs, Larry Correa, Seanan McGuire, Elizabeth Baer. I even tried an Anita Blake novel. None of them satisfied me. I wanted something gritty, without Correa's blood-spattered no-consequences killing sprees, a book where the characters try to do the right thing without slipping into Uncanny Valley with Patricia Briggs. Something dark, where the heroine doesn't waste her time meebling about love. Something without fairies. I have found my new urban fantasy. Zoo City by Lauren Bucus is exactly what I was looking for. At its heart, it's a missing person story, with the sort of detective work that features in all of my favorite urban fantasies. However, it's set in Johannesburg, in South Africa, which puts it in a completely different hemisphere from the usual Minneapolis, New York, Kansas City urban fantasy settings. It's a place where people are still practicing traditional forms of magic. It doesn't take much of a push to move things over into the genuinely supernatural. The supernatural elements in Zoo City are precisely used and limited to things that will actually advance the story. Unlike many books in the genre, Zoo City does not start with the premise that everything in every mythology ever is real. She posits three magical phenomena. First, the undertow, a dripping darkness that sucks the guilty down to some undefined place. Next, the animals, a sort of familiar that stands between the guilty person and the undertow and keeps them from being taken away for a little while. Finally, there's the magical knack that each animal to person develops. Everything else, Muti, spirits, and gods, is an open question. When we meet our heroine, she already has her sloth, but she hasn't hit rock bottom yet. She writes Nigerian scam spam for a crime syndicate, and uses her magical knack to find lost things as a side job. It is so much fun to watch her work, armed with nothing more than the right words, the right clothes, and enough confidence to move mountains. The plot does not follow any of urban fantasy's usual models. Bucus lays out the important things right at the beginning, and then spends most of the novel distracting her readers with shinies. I can't say much more without spoiling the ending, which was not at all what I expected. Zoo City is only Lauren Bucus' second novel. I really, really hope she writes more. I have been watching the HBO adaptation of George R.R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, and I have to say that I'm impressed. It's wonderful to see a fantasy epic taken this seriously. I think a lot of my enjoyment of the show comes from seeing a genre that I love translated to the screen in a way that honors the original. They've taken some liberties with the books, as was inevitable. I find I don't mind the changes. HBO was naturally quite worried that ordinary viewers wouldn't be able to keep track of all the different characters. So far, they have focused on the four prominent houses: Lannister, Baratheon, Targaryen, and Stark. The dialogue is written so as to make the character relationships as clear as possible. That has produced some interesting conversations. Uncle Benji, I'm your nephew. We should go to the feast. My father, who is your brother, is there. And so on. Nevertheless, apparently some viewers have confused the roles of Jon Arryn and Rhaegar Targaryen. Somehow. I love the way this show looks. It's medieval, which means that the people are dirty. Both the farrier and Lady Stark have to walk through the same mud in the castle courtyard. Arya's sleeves are sewn to her shirt with big, easy stitches, so that they'll be easy to replace when she tears them or outgrows them. The queen and her ladies look bedraggled after a month on the road. And even on television, it does take a month to get from King's Landing to Winterfell. The Song of Ice and Fire is a brutal series of books, and it doesn't look like HBO is going to pull their punches. There are times when I have to look away, for the rape scenes, various beheadings, and so on. So far, I don't think it has been any more violent than the books, but that is a very high bar indeed. One thing I dislike about the series is the way they've handled the Dothraki. They are a tribe of horse nomads. I believe the technical term for them would be space Mongolians. It's nice to see the Dothraki rank and file finally getting some lines. Unfortunately, that hasn't extended to Jason Momoa, Khal Drogo. I just watched the third episode, and I think he has said one complete sentence. In conclusion, someone needs to invent sunglasses so that Jaime Lannister can put them on when he delivers his lines. For those of you itching for more Song of Ice and Fire goodness, there is a lively discussion going on over at the podcast of Ice and Fire. They've paused their reread of the series to do commentary for the television show. The podcast of Ice and Fire, like its namesake, is not safe for work. In science news, the discovery of a pterosaur fossil in association with a pterosaur egg has prompted scientists to ask new questions about pterosaur reproduction and growth. The egg had a porous, leathery shell, like that of a crocodile. Therefore, it had to have been kept in a humid environment. Modern lizards solve this problem by burying their eggs in mounds of rotting vegetation. Rot also produces heat, thus saving the animals from needing to incubate their soft-shelled eggs. Based on skeletal evidence, some scientists believe that baby pterosaurs were what scientists call super precocial. That is, they could walk and possibly also fly mere moments after hatching. I cannot shake the image of a mound of dirt somewhere in the forest, suddenly erupting with sharp little beaks and leathery wings. That would have been something to see. Only 16 days until Conquest, Kansas City's Science Fiction Convention. If you have not yet registered, follow the link on the show notes to the online pre-registration form. Discounted memberships are available online until May 15th. I hope to see you there. The Voice of the Vortex is produced under Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, Share Alike 3.0 license. To comment on this episode, or to submit flash fiction for future shows, drop an email to voiceofthevortex@gmail.com. Show notes are available at voiceofthevortex.podbean.com. This is Sarah Frost, the Voice of the Vortex, signing off.